When I was growing up, we lived for a couple years in a house with a really cool backyard. It had big boulders and grass and trees with these really long, supple branches and other trees with shorter but unusually straight and slender twigs that my brother and I discovered could be used for all kinds of interesting things, like whittle away on a point on some of the shorter, slender branches, and then if you take one of the long branches and make a notch on each end and add a length of nylon thread from my mom's sewing room, hoping she won't miss it, then voila, a bow and arrow. Many bows and many arrows. Which was a very exciting thing for my 10-year-old self and my 12-year-old brother. I don't remember if we ever actually hit any of the targets we set up, but I remember we had fun. This little scene came to my mind as I was reflecting on this season of Yom Kippur with its core message around sin and redemption. This is the time of year when Jewish people all over the world come together to acknowledge wrongdoing, small and large, and ask for forgiveness from each other and from God. And sin plays a big role in it. And sin, as some of you may know, is actually an archery term, bows and arrows. Now, sin is a tough topic for many of us. It certainly has been for me. I spent a good number of my preteen and early years attending a school for and with foreign missionaries. We talked about sin, and my big takeaway, sin is bad. If you do it, you're bad. If you keep doing it, you're really bad, and eventually God will punish you. Although I had a short stint during which I tried really hard not to do anything wrong, which is tough when you've already reached the seventh grade and haven't really tried all that hard to be good before, I found I couldn't really keep it up. Yet there it was, this idea of sinning and being a sinner, and it felt heavy and hard, like you should be ashamed of yourself, kind of hard, like you are bad, kind of hard. I suspect some of you have your own experiences with this word, or being told you should be ashamed of yourself, with feeling ashamed of yourself, and maybe even feeling like you're bad or unredeemable, a feeling that we can get stuck in, sometimes for years. It's one reason why I think many UU congregations don't even use this word with all its heavy associations. For me, at some point, not till I was an adult and long after I had left the religions of my youth, I heard about this different translation of the original biblical Hebrew, this archery, bows and arrows translation of the word, and I liked it much better. Sin, this translation said, simply means missing the mark, as in you took aim, you tried to hit the target, and you missed. Maybe it was the wind, maybe it was the shape of that particular arrow, maybe the bow was too rigid or your hand slipped. Whatever the cause, the arrow didn't go where you had intended. It was an idea that appealed to me immediately. Not only because it brought back these fun memories of the backyard and my brother, but also, frankly, because it was just a relief. Because what it meant was, I'm not bad, even if I sin, even if I mess up. Sinning is just, well, you tried and you missed. That's okay. Just try again. You made a poor choice. Recalculate, as the GPSs used to say. This new interpretation was like this dark, bottomless pit just got filled in by the Theological Public Works Department. Danger removed. standing on solid ground. Now I'm okay. I'll be okay. I'm not bad. And there is no celestial punishment lurking around the corner, just waiting for me. So that was good news. But you know, it can't be that simple because I'm only 5 minutes into the sermon. And nothing is ever that simple, at least from my point of view. Because the fact is, if I'm really honest, it's not always entirely random, this missing the mark. I have tendencies. I tend to miss the same marks in the same way again and again. If it was simply a mistake, then as soon as I realized something was not for my ultimate good, I would change it. As soon as I remembered that something I was doing didn't align with my highest values, I would stop. But I do not always stop, and I do not always change it. So it's not just the wind. It's not just the shape of the arrow or the bow. Sometimes it really is the archer. I mean, let's get real for a moment. When I took cookies without asking as a kid, was that a mistake? Well, maybe the first time. But by time number 30 or 100, probably not entirely random. When I would pick the same fight with my friend over and over, not random. Or as an adult, now I think back on some of the ways that I've hurt people in my life in similar ways more than once, or failed to help. Not random. Maybe I should be ashamed of myself. I will say, I don't think it's just me wrestling with this blame, guilt, responsibility, is it a mistake or was it intentional, good choice, poor choice kind of thing. You can see it on the news any day, any jury trial of just about any legal case. See it in the questions over punishment versus rehabilitation in our justice system. Even the phrase, poor choice, it's actually kind of a fascinating phrase when you think about it. On the one hand, it implies that the doer, having made a choice, can simply make a different one. Hit the mark next time. But you may have noticed that we tend to use this term for things that are like choices, sort of, kind of like when Jim drank a bottle of whiskey the afternoon of his wedding, poor choice. Or when Janice blew up at her boss on stage right before a big presentation at salary renegotiation time, poor choice of timing. Or when Mary made a decision to marry a man who'd lied to her 3 times about important things in just the last 3 months, poor choice. Or even just everyday things, spending that cash you didn't really have, staying up way too late again watching Netflix, making you very, very cranky the next day. I suppose they could be called choices, but they're not exactly the kind a person makes after thoughtfully considering all their options. The fact is, when it comes to so many of our hardest things, most of us don't feel like we're making choices at all. More like being swept away in a swift current or repelled by some magnetic force field from the good we would do if only we could. I'm going to take a leap and assume that most of us here did not make it this far in life without something hard happening to you at some point between growing up and now. Whether that's being teased as a kid or scapegoated, bullied, ignored, made fun of, or simply left out of something that was important to you. And that's just the social stuff. Then there's the injuries, health scares, family dynamics, caretakers, and others who carried their own hurts and acted them out in ways that hurt you. As adults, many of us can shape our lives to avoid these kinds of things, but I don't know any kid who escapes all of that growing up. And when you're young, you're open and you're vulnerable, and that stuff hurts. Life is suffering, as the Buddhists say. And what happens then? Well, it depends on the circumstances, but when hard stuff happened, you may have gotten the message to suck it up. Or maybe you were told everything was fine, and so now you tend to think everything is fine, even when it's not. Or maybe you got the message that if you're just really nice to everyone, hard things won't happen again. But now you give too much, get resentful, and disappear. Or maybe you never learned how to work with your anger, and now you lash out in ways you wish you didn't. Maybe your caretakers use drink or drugs to numb themselves, and now you do the same, but with food or overwork. Maybe you learn to distract yourself by keeping really busy, but now struggle to pay attention to the people who matter most to you. There are a million ways we humans have to cope with the stuff that got put on us. So my theory is that those currents and gravitational fields that cause us to hurt other people, they do not come out of nowhere. There's a reason we make poor choices, and it's not because we are inherently bad. But we are also not just fine. We carry scars. And we tend to act some of them out, separating us from each other and ourselves and cutting us off from the deep sense of belonging in this world that is our birthright. Now, the idea that we are not just fine doesn't sound like good news, but knowing it is good news. Because much as we try not to look, or much as we tell ourselves this is just how we are, we kind of know something's off. Sometimes we look like that gorilla. Sometimes we act like that gorilla. And seeing that, becoming willing to see that, can be so powerful. Because that's where change begins. So here's this holiday, Yom Kippur, which is all about noticing these things. The most obvious first, ways you've acted out or failed to act this year. You were mean to your partner. You didn't help your daughter with her project, even though you'd promised. You stole your coworker's idea. You failed to follow through on something important. This holiday is an invitation to make that right, to recognize and then apologize, to set things right with the people you've hurt. But there is more. When we say we're sorry, we often think it's for the other person or for the good of the relationship. We say we're sorry because we think they want us to, or because we don't want them to be mad at us, or because we know, because we've read self-help books, that apologizing makes friendships, marriages, parent-child relationships, it makes all that stuff go better. But the thing we don't always realize is how it helps, maybe even heals us. One of the key rituals of Yom Kippur is reenactment of death, which also doesn't sound like good news, but is also good news. In order to heal a painful thing, we need to see it, feel it, recognize it's there, which means not acting out what covers it over. Letting go for a time of the things that have been comforting the original discomforts. And there's no comforting anything about death. We can't take a single thing with us. Not our daily mocha latte, not the relief of telling someone exactly where we think they need to go, not a single self-justification, not my work, and not even any of my friends. But in that stark light, we can see more of what we did, of why we did it, of what was driving us, of what still hurts. On the Day of Atonement, the evening of October 8th through the evening of October 9th, observant Jews all over the world will renounce their comforts. They will fast. They will wear white like a burial shroud. They will go to synagogue and pray all day. They will remember their mortality and allow it to show them something that just might turn them around. How about us? How about you? What might taking a deep, long, slow look show you? Life is precious, and it's short. May we look openly, listen carefully, acknowledge deeply, apologize freely, and find a willingness to do whatever it takes to turn ourselves around. Toward ourselves, toward each other, and toward an ever-widening sense of true belonging in this world.